Anya entered the desolate coffee shop, walking to a man clad in khaki attire seated near the back. He smiled warmly as he spotted them. Anya walked over and held out her hand.
Ah, Ms. Creed!
Dr. Hu, it's a pleasure to meet you. This is my associate, Mr. Ru.
Hello. I hope you don't mind, but I took the liberty of ordering on your behalf. Mr. Ru, I know Ms. Creed's field is archaeology, but what is your specialty?
I'm more of a dabbler, I'm afraid. At my age, I tend to gravitate to whatever excites me at the moment. Miss Creed's interest in this whole mystery behind the Bird Black fanned my own interest.
If you don't mind my asking, Mr. Ru, where did you study?
At the Sorbonne. I was somewhat eclectic in my studies. I picked up several courses in art, languages, and literature.
The server stepped up to the table carrying three large coffee mugs and placed one in front of each of them.
Mr. Ru, if you don't mind my asking...
Of course.
What interested you in Lulan City?
The story about Xia Wu Ying, of course. An emperor's assassin who turns on the hand that fed him in a bid for power. You've got to admit, it's a powerful story.
You know that those stories might only be myth.
I do. But I also know that you were interested in the Bird Plaque Anya located as the result of a subterfuge. That tells me you're also interested in this myth.
I am interested indeed. The rumors of Xia Wu Ying have never been verified, but I feel certain they're based on some kind of fact. If the City of the Sands existed, if even one piece still exists, such a find could make a career.
Or might make a man rich.
At Rue's bold statement, the smile left Hu's face.
That's not why I do this kind of work. If it was, I could make a very comfortable living in the black market. China is one of the world's oldest civilizations, and much of its history has been lost over the years. I hope you're not here just for some treasure-hunting expedition.
Of course not. However, I would like to take part in the search for whatever secrets about black holds. If we are successful, I believe Miss Creed is going to feature it on her television show. My financing of her efforts here wouldn't have to be philanthropic, then. I might end up helping to produce that segment of her show.
Forgive me, Miss Creed, but that program doesn't appeal to me.
I understand. There are days that it doesn't appeal to me either. However, the show does fund some of the other research work that I do. People aren't standing in line to hand out money to archaeologists, but the television production company does allow me some leeway in the work I choose.
Was the belt plaque part of a television assignment?
Not exactly. I was asked to track it down by a man named Huang Fu Kao. Once we found it, he tried to kill me.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
You know him?
He and his men have broken into my office and home searching for information about the City of Thieves. In fact, only a couple of days ago, I found two men that I believe belonged to Huang Fu Kao's criminal organization.
Have you confirmed that?
No. When I found them, one of the men was dead. The other died before we could get him here to Donghuang.
What happened?
They were shot. The man who lived for a short time claimed they were attacked by a fox spirit. If you ask me, I think the thugs were under the influence of drugs and shot each other. When I arrived in the cave where they camped, I got a contact high from whatever they'd been smoking.
Anya's eyes suddenly grew large. She glanced at Ru, then looked intently at Dr. Hu.
Did you see any drug paraphernalia?
To tell you the truth, I didn't look. Finding that dead man and the other one wounded, it was all a bit much.
Anya reached into her backpack and brought out her computer. She placed it on the table, opened it, and powered it up.
You're sure you got a contact high while you were inside that cave?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Dr. Sven Hedden?
Of course. He's credited by some for the rediscovery of Lulan City while traveling along the Silk Road for the studies he was doing.
What about Dr. Heinrich Lehmann?
I've never heard of him.
Dr. Lehmann was a casualty on Dr. Hedden's expedition. A few days after the discovery of Lulan, some men from Hedden's work crew found Lehmann a few miles away.
Anya tapped a few keys and brought up the copies of the documents she'd found regarding Lulan City. She also pulled up a scanned copy of the old news story about Lehmann. She'd tracked it down in a Berlin newspaper after finding out about the death in the reports she'd read from Hedden's discovery. The black-and-white picture of Lehmann showed a young, gawky man with round-lensed glasses. He wore a simple black business suit. Who studied the picture and the article?
I'm afraid I don't read German.
Neither do I, but I had a friend translate it for me. The news story talks mostly about Lehmann, his education and his family, but it talks about his death as well.
How did he die?
From dehydration, but before he did, he was raving about having found a system of underground chambers filled with gold and gems. He also claimed to have been attacked by a fox spirit.
I haven't heard of any of this.
I wouldn't have either if I hadn't found Dr. Lehmann's name on one of Professor Hedden's reports.
Anya can be quite meticulous once she gets started.
Do you know where Lehmann's body was found?
One of the other men, also a German, kept a journal. He noted Lehmann's death and even made a map of where they found him.
It seems to me that the man in Lehmann's state wouldn't be able to walk very far.
I agree.
Did Hedden's team search for the underground chambers?
They did, but they came up empty-handed. Hedden didn't put much stock in Lehmann's fox spirit story.
They could simply have been the ravings of a man out of his head with thirst.
The man who wrote about Lehmann's death was a medical doctor and an amateur archaeologist.
God save us. Mr. Rue, I mean no disrespect.
None taken.
The doctor also believed that Lehmann was under the effects of a hallucinogen.
You believe Lehmann was suffering from an unintentional exposure?
I do. One of the things that the myths about Shao Ying agree on was that he was an expert herbalist.
In the time that he was known as Tuchardus, he was reputed to be a master healer among the Scythians.
Rue, in the city of Thebes, would it have been out of line to assume they might have stockpiled poison?
Not at all. In a water-poor environment such as that around Lulan, poisoning a water source would have been a good tactic to drive an entrenched enemy away.
You think those men I found were exposed to the same hallucinogen?
Yes, and you as well.
A hallucinogen that was still potent? After 2,000 years?
Maybe longer. The dryness of the desert has preserved mummies that were over 4,000 years old. A burial tomb would have many of the same properties as an underground chamber. Back in the 1960s, the Chinese government experimented with nuclear weapons. Perhaps one of those shock waves fractured some of the passageways near the storerooms, causing them to open a crack.
You must forgive me if I offend you, Miss Creed, but that's quite a stretch.
Well, Professor, if I'm wrong, then we'll know it soon enough.
Kelly Swan watched the new arrivals with interest and more than a little paranoia. For the past few months, men and women had hunted her for the price the CIA had put on her head, and although it was unlikely they could have traced her this far, she couldn't discount the possibility. The chestnut-haired young woman had a serious, somewhat dangerous air about her, but it seemed to Kelly that the old man might be too far past his prime to be an agent. She sat outside her tent and ate mechanically, hardly tasting the food. That was probably for the better. Dinner was a bland hodgepodge of old meat and vegetables. Even though she was in excellent shape, Kelly felt worn out. The work at the dig was hard and seemed never to end. It didn't matter to her, though. She wasn't going anywhere until Guy showed up. One of Professor Hu's assistants went through the camp, talking with different workers. Observing him, Kelly saw that he only talked to the younger men and women among the laborers. As she finished her meal, the assistant made his way over to her. He held his clipboard expectantly, pen poised.
Good evening.
Hello.
Professor Hu is putting together a special expedition, so he is looking for volunteers.
Kelly almost said no. When undercover, it was best not to draw attention. Volunteering was all about drawing attention. She decided to learn a little more before deferring, however.
Expedition to where?
There are some caves in the mountains that Professor Hu wants to investigate.
Why?
I don't know.
Are the new people going?
I don't know. Maybe. Does it matter? Well?
I'll go. It's Kelly Chow.
Song jotted the name down on his list, then continued moving through the camp. Kelly took her mess kit back to the camp mess, washed it, and retrieved her bedroll. She walked outside the camp, easily slipping past the sentries posted at the perimeter as protection against bandits. Once in the shadows, she made her way to the place where she'd buried her weapons and the bag of bones her father had left for her. She'd finally figured out the secret of the bones, and was sorry she hadn't done so earlier. Sheltered by a dune, steeped in shadows, she took the ball from the bag. All of the bones had been cunningly cut and shaped. If she'd studied them more back in Shanghai, she might have seen them for what they truly were. Once she'd been able to divine their nature, she'd put them together. When they were all in place, each piece interlocking with the next, they'd formed a spherical, three-dimensional interlocking puzzle. When she'd been little, she'd been fascinated by such things. Each of the bones was inscribed with nonsensical Cantonese. They also bore intricate designs that she had never seen anywhere before. Pondering it, she slipped the puzzle back into the bag, then removed her weapons from the hole. She wrapped the pistols in the bedroll, folding it so the weapons wouldn't fall out. Whatever happened come morning, she would be ready. The sun had risen shortly before 7, but Anya had been awake since 5. She had worked through a set of Tai Chi forms and taken an abbreviated shower in one of the camp's portable units. She was always amazed at the amount of filth that could build up over just one evening in the desert. She checked her computer and digital camera, then hauled out her working journal and caught up on the entries. Rue had risen at 6, grumbling about the bad coffee. His attire surprised Anya. He wore khakis, hiking boots, and a broad-brimmed hat with a leopard print scarf tied around it. A full hour went by before she was able to look at him with a straight face. They had shared a silent breakfast of rice and pork and some fresh fruit while the rest of the camp came awake around them. Professor Hu approached them while they were cleaning their dishes. He took his hat off and mopped the sweat from his brow.
I've got 10 people accompanying us. If Miss Creed's predictions are accurate, and we do find evidence of the City of the Sands up there, we'll need the help.
Do they know why we're going up there?
No. My assistant simply told them this was to be an ancillary expedition.
You do realize that you may have a spy somewhere in your ranks. Guy seems to be a very crafty man.
Other than myself, 2 assistants and 6 graduate students, there's no one here I've met before. I don't want to take all of my experienced people with us. Work here will come to a standstill. And if we need help, I'd rather not have all of my people exposed to any danger. Are you ready?
Whenever you are.
Ever ridden a camel before, Miss Creed?
A few times.
Anya went to the corral and picked out one of the belligerent beasts. He smelled awful and was none too happy with the kick to his side she used to urge him up. She secured the saddle and gave him a light smack to the behind with a riding crop. He knelt again so she could mount. Hut, hut, hut! Seated in the saddle, Anya tugged on the reins and commanded the camel to its huge, disc-shaped feet. It surged, pushing up on its hindquarters first, then on the front legs. She sat very high off the ground and waited for Rue. He had gone back inside his tent for a moment. He reemerged wearing a large pistol strapped to his thigh and a heavy hunting rifle slung over his shoulder. The weapons attracted uncomfortable looks from many of the workers, but Rue ignored it as he saddled and mounted his own camel. He bobbed off balance as the animal stood.
I've always hated these foul-tempered beasts.
You've ridden them before?
More times than I care to remember.
Where?
Here, believe it or not. Hut!
Before Anya could ask anything further, Rue whipped the camel into a trot. As she moved to follow, she noticed a Chinese woman about her age staring harshly at her. They held each other's gaze for just a moment before both looked away, their camels lumbering on. Garin Braden drifted into consciousness, wrapped in a tangle of slender female arms and legs. Struggling with a hangover, he cursed Guy to himself. He'd only gotten drunk so he wouldn't have to listen to the man complain anymore. Garin grabbed the cell phone from the nightstand.
What is it? Mr. Braden, they're moving.
Where are they going?
Toward the mountain, sir.
Are the woman and the old man together?
Yes, sir.
That was all he needed to hear. If Anya and Rue were in an agreement on how to proceed, they had to know more than he did at the moment.
Is the helicopter ready?
Yes, sir.
Good. Wake Mr. Guy and let him know.
Yes, sir.
Garin smiled as he walked to the window and looked out across the desert. Darkness from an approaching wall of storm clouds smudged the horizon. He leaned heavily against the window. The coming heat was already warming the glass, and morning had barely dawned. They would be on the move early to beat the sky's murderous rays. Garin couldn't help but wonder whether Rue's bones or his own would be bleaching in the desert under this very sun.